not evening anymore. Good morning, everybody. This is Jen B. I'm filling in for Patty Vasquez here on WGN 720 AM. I'm here. I've been talking, and now with Kate, an agent at Shirley Hamilton, and now we're joined by three other amazing women that I am so grateful that are here. These are women who are writers and who are very good writers and write, I'm sure, for other things besides the AV Club. I'm sure they have a huge history. Why don't you introduce yourselves so we know who you are? We'll start with you right here, my dear.
Hi, my name is Laura Adamchuk, and I'm primarily a copy editor at the AV Club, and then I also do other writing.
We will get to the other writing, because I'm always interested in other stuff, that people's whole sort of big picture life, too. But so we'll go next to you.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Penzi Moog. I am also a copy editor, as well as the books editor at the AV Club.
Great. Nice to have you.
I'm Gwen Einant, also on the copy desk at the AV Club, and I've been in publishing a long time, been at AV Club for about 3 years now.
3 years. Okay. So why don't you tell our listeners, what is the AV Club? A lot of people know, but some people might not know. So anyone want to jump in and say, what is the AV Club?
Sure. So the AV Club is pop culture writing. We call ourselves pop culture writing for pop culture obsessives, and we are sister sites with The Onion and Clickhole, but we are also our own entity, which is all real pop culture writing. Some people get confused about that.
What do you mean? Do you mean
like, because we're affiliated with The Onion, people will say, oh, but the AV Club's joking, because we do have like a humorous tone a lot of times, but it's serious pop culture writing.
Yeah, no, when we talk about the article, it's serious. There's right. nothing, there's nothing, it's sad that it's serious in some ways, but there's nothing, it's not a farce. It is a real deal. So that's what the AV, and so why was it created? Why did why did the AV Club come to be?
I think it was when The Onion was still in Madison, when in the paper format, if we can all remember, and they would add just pop culture calendars, because they're trying to make it more localized. They'd have calendar listings, and then they added like album reviews, movie reviews, and it kind of grew from there. And now it's like one of the biggest verticals that The Onion has. Like, it's more like on the same level as The Onion. We share an office with them. We're right on the north side of Chicago. But it's really grown, and I think it was 2013 when The Onion stopped doing paper.
Right.
So it's all online now. Yeah. And what the AV Club has, and which I'm sure we'll talk about, has a really, I want to say, vibrant commenting community. We have a big online presence, and we have a lot of people who just come to the site every day, and they call it a sticky website. They just hang around and read everything. We have regulars. We have regular commenters. And
it's like
really
a corner bar.
It is a corner bar.
It's a
neighborhood bar.
You'll see a lot of the same people show up again.
In full disclosure, I am a part of the Game of Thrones community on the AV Club.
All right.
I comment a lot.
It's everywhere.
So tell me about that. So what does that mean, the Game of Thrones community?
Every time they cover Game of Thrones, write about Game of Thrones, there are some people that might pop up in some commenting, and I might be one of those guys.
Oh, right. You're one of those. That's what you're saying. Oh, so you're a free, and you, we won't call
no,
you.
No, I always like everything.
No, I'm just saying, do you use your real name or no?
No, I don't.
Okay, there you go.
I have a different.
All right.
Most people don't.
No, I mean, it's smart not to, actually. So that's how the AV Club came to be, and why don't we talk about the article? Now, the article has a title that I am not allowed to say one of the words. So we're going to say that it stopped jazzing all over journalism. And you guys were the contributors. There were also more, right?
Right.
More contributors that weren't able to join us. So why doesn't someone tell me what's going on with this article, why you wrote it, and what it's saying? And you can see it's on my, if you go to my Facebook page, there is the article. Look at it. You can see the full title. If it's just Jen Bosworth on Facebook, you'll see me, my goofy face, and you'll know it's me. And you can read the whole article there with the full title. But anyway, so stop jazzing all over journalism. Why don't you guys talk about this article?
Okay, well, one of the great things about working at the AV Club is that we're really encouraged to write about pop culture, write reactive pieces. I mean, we do, you know, TV reviews every week and news items and, you know, big articles that we have planned ahead of time. And sometimes something will happen where you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so fired up. I need to write about this right now.
Right.
We actually had a precedent for this article when that whole Amy Schumer, Glamour did their plus size issue, and they listed her as plus size, and she came out and said, you know, I'm not plus size and there's nothing wrong with being that, but I don't want like little girls to think that, you know, this is that my body is not normal because it's totally normal.
It's so, it's, I'm just going to interject that this is something that, so I was approached to be a plus size model one time and I did it for a company called ModCloth. And
Oh, love ModCloth.
We all love ModCloth so much.
Would you get free clothes?
I did not. Have bought many clothes from there. But anyway, the point is they had they are a great company in that they don't talk about that. They will just say sizes from 0 to 28, 32 or whatever. That was the one company. However, the whole plus size industry, and we can get back to that later, makes me insane. And also, I know this may not be popular, but I have it irks me that Amy Schumer actually came out because part of me wanted to say, oh, you just don't want to be called plus size. Yeah. That's your problem. And so that is still part of the problem. Instead of saying nothing or, you know what, let's talk about size. Let's talk about bodies. Let's not. I mean, so if someone calls me plus size, which I am. That is their term for me, and also sort of what they think of me is none of my business in some ways. But anyway, I have many feelings about that. Right. But anyway, so there was a precedent for writing this article.
Right. Well, so that came out, and yeah, there are a lot of different opinions about it. It's another like big hot button feminist topic, and we did a similar kind of roundtable. I'm like, I want to hear everybody's opinions on this. Can we just like ask our female writers, you know, about body positivity? And I just thought it was great. I actually mentioned Mindy Kaling in mine, and she actually tweeted it and saying like, thank you for including me. And it was really good. So there we had a precedent. And I read Twitter a lot. I read a lot of these pieces, and I had seen the Sky Ferreira piece. Mm-hmm. I had seen the Renee Zellweger piece. These are all in the article. If you go to avclub.com right now, it's on the front page. But just that there was like these sexist articles about these artists just talking about the way they look. So that had been going on. We were having lunch and we're sitting there and I read the new Vanity Fair article about Margot Robbie and I literally gasped. I'm like, what?
Yeah, and if you read the AV Club article, it will explain what they said, but basically and you can basically say what they said about her, which was, well, go ahead.
It was all so like two-dimensional, and the tweets were really funny. They were like all calling it out immediately. Like, I think this is a real interesting story because there's these horrible old school, you know, sexist articles, but then there's a whole new way to get on them. You don't have to write a letter to the editor anymore. You can just immediately get on Twitter. So because I work where I work and I'm so fortunate, I immediately went to our senior editor, Amara Eakin, who was still eating lunch. Actually, I think I interrupted her lunch because I was so hopped up. And she's like, I talked to John Tatey, editor in chief. And I didn't even finish telling him about like the third article when he's like, you know, absolutely. Yes. Go with it.
So he's a guest on the show.
I know. He loves it over here.
Yeah.
So that was Wednesday. And they're like, but you want to get this up quick because it's a reactive piece. There's an article on Jezebel right now about who these Vanity Fair are.
Also, there's a whole Renee Zellweger.
Right. There's a lot. So we want to be on top of it. We want to be part of the conversation. We don't want to be late to that. So I just immediately sent out a big email, and it's hilarious. My prompt is all that first part of the article that starts out WTF.
Yes.
And because you can tell I was really rage fueled. And then I send it out. I'm like, you guys, if we can do this. And I think I mentioned quick turnaround like four times in this email.
Yeah.
And later, like, I must have been insane. Can you guys like get this back and we could get this up on Friday? And I went to bed on Wednesday night and I'd gotten like one response. And I'm like, oh, man, you know, maybe it's not going to happen.
Right. And this is from your fellow writers.
Right. Just like the women on the AV Club, the other AV Club women writers. And when I woke up in the morning, I had just had like a bunch. I had Laura, it's so funny that I couldn't even like get ready for work because I was laughing too hard. And then I got to work and I just got more and more. I wound up getting 4,000 words in less than 24 hours from eight wonderful women. And that's why the piece went up on Friday. And as you see, it's had still quite a reaction.
And it's still featured. Yeah. And it's up on the AV Club website. And it's on my Facebook page. And it's quite something when I am always hopeful in this dark world sometimes when women come together and can create something. And it actually feels like change is possible, and using the written word to change things. It is always so refreshing. We are here with the three brilliant women from the AV Club. We've got Gwen, Caitlin, and Laura. I'm gonna make sure I get everyone's names in there. I'm not going to attempt the last name. Craig was telling me, and I'm like, I can barely say Jen Bosworth. I called myself Ben Josworth earlier. So anyway, we're gonna take a break, and we will be back with the brilliant AV Club writers. This is Jen B. I'm filling in for Patty Vasquez on WGN 720 AM. Good morning, everybody. This is Jen B. I'm filling in for Patty Vasquez here on WGN 720 AM. I'm happy to be here. Good morning. Good morning, all the people in the studio. Good morning to Chicago. If you're just joining us, we are here with three writers from the AV Club. The AV Club, online, huge online presence. Craig has informed me that you review all kinds of things, probably every TV show.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And I'm here with three of the writers of this article that is stop jazzing all over journalism. And basically it's about how journalism has failed us when it comes to talking about women. I think that's basically the bottom line.
Yeah.
We aren't doing so well. This article is brilliantly written and hilarious and great, but I never see stuff like this written. Maybe I'm not reading the right things, but I don't know. I don't pick up fashion magazines anymore. I don't read Us Weekly. I find that stuff to be triggering.
You know, and even the tone of the article that they put out, and I know we can't say the full title, which is sort of awesome that we can't say it on WGN Radio, but the tone of it is so refreshing.
Yep.
And it's so great the way that this was written. So all of you did a great job, because I think it really brings more awareness to an issue that some of us might not even realize.
Well, I think the thing is, maybe you can chime in on this, of course, is that there's so much unconscious stuff that goes on that... what I noticed was after picking up Vanity Fair, W, or one of those, you know, Us Weeklies, I feel terrible about myself and the state of the world. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't quite place it. I lived in LA, which was a whole nother nightmare.
Yeah,
and
I worked for a
movie star for 5 years, and I learned to hate.
Are you going
to
say the movie star?
I worked for Nicolas Cage.
She worked for Nicolas Cage.
Oh my God,
I did. Wow. I was one of one assistant for him out of many. I learned to hate myself there. And that's so sad. But I talk about it a lot. And I am learning to not hate myself. Mm. But I notice that when I have these magazines or even articles in the article about or the picking at people, the picking at the Kardashians, it starts to really get into my cells, and I start to feel terrible about the world.
Right.
And I thought, I have to stop reading this. I have to put this down, and I have to pretend, because I don't know about you guys, but with this sort of, you know, crappy journalism, there is that sort of clickbait. You get sucked in, and all of a sudden it's 2 hours later, and you've bought Kim Kardashian's lip gloss. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's how slippery slope it is. So we'll get back to the article. So you were saying that you got all these amazing responses from your women writers at the AV Club. And then how did it progress from there? How did you get it up? We talked about it. Like, how do you compile it? How does that work?
That's an interesting question. It's really just, you know, we have a content management system, and you set up the article, and I was literally pouring text into the CMS during our staff meeting.
Where What's a CMS?
The content management system.
Oh, okay.
Just, you know, as quickly as I could, because like I said, by the time I had finished, it was a pretty long piece.
Yes.
At that same staff meeting is when we knocked around that particular headline, which we had kind of talked about online. And I'm like, are you guys cool with this? And everyone's like, yeah, go for it. And then after that, it goes to another member of our awesome copy editing team. Kelsey took it upon herself she copy edited the whole thing that afternoon, and then it went up at midnight. Like,
that's
the turnaround
so fantastic.
Was so quick, and it wouldn't have happened if, you know, you guys and all the other women listed in that article hadn't just stepped up. I got to work, and Katie's like, I'm too mad to write.
Yeah.
I can't get this to you. And I'm like, just lean into it. No, it's going to be better.
No, it's funny. I had written maybe like 3,000 words just of like I read each three articles, which is really one of the horrible parts of writing this piece that we did, was that I had to go back and read.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're just so painfully sexist.
So
you know?
It's an article in Vanity Fair.
So there's the Vanity Fair one is about Margot Robbie. And that's written, it starts off with her sort of being described as this ethereal Australian goddess and how she's tall,
but only in heels. Oh, yeah,
she's blonde, but dark at the roots.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Gwen.
No, there was a really, really good comment in our comment section because it was like, she's tall, but only with shoes that make her that way. And it's like, what?
Right.
What is that? She goes 50 miles an hour, but only if she's in a car.
Yeah.
You know, she flies, but only when she's held by an eagle.
Bizarre attempt at poetry, I think, that this author is trying to do.
It's sort of this nuanced thing that doesn't work.
It doesn't work at all. And so that's one problem with this article. The other problem, of course, is that Margot Robbie, she's in what's going to be probably the biggest movie of the summer, Suicide Squad, next month. And she's being reduced down to her blonde hair and like how tall she is. And it's insane. And they barely... You know, they obviously talk about the movie, but really the emphasis is just like solely on her appearance. And it's the same thing with the
Sky Ferreira
piece.
Talk about the Sky Ferreira piece, people's.
You want
to? What magazine was that in?
That was in LA Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just really.
She is a singer.
She's a musician.
Yeah,
and she,
musician.
I mean, she does a lot of stuff, though.
She's also an actress, I think, right?
She acts.
Yeah, with David Lynch.
Yeah, she has a makeup line. I mean,
she's obviously
really talented.
Right.
She's really talented. She's doing a lot of different interesting things.
And they said, we need her sex appeal right now.
Her sex appeal is
what
we need.
Pop music needs her sex
right
appeal.
Now.
And it was like that her sex appeal was as creative and as much of a gift as like Slash's guitar playing.
Mm-hmm.
Just
so that was her gift to the world.
Well, thank you for that. It's not her music.
Right.
Or
she had
else
she
bringing.
Bestowed us with that. That's what she has to offer us.
Her appearance.
Right.
Yeah. And sort of similarly, the last article was about Renee Zellweger, which was sort of different, which was this piece about if Renee Zellweger doesn't look like, you know, quote unquote herself anymore, is she really the same actor? And that was sort of getting at this other idea, which is that if you don't look young and hot anymore, you're not the same person suddenly.
And tell that to Mickey Rourke or Tom. Right.
Yeah, tell that to or Nicolas Cage or.
Oh yeah,
they all have it. I mean,
right. Mm-hmm. Nick Nolte.
Well, and also that like when you're no longer beautiful, if you're a woman,
you,
you're no longer a
well, you
value
have no purpose.
To us.
Right, it's you have like, no purpose.
Yeah, and the best part that in that article that I thought personally was the most offensive was that the author was trying to like put context around her starring in. Risky Business with Tom Cruise.
Jerry Maguire.
My bad. And
okay.
And the author writes that she's just not as hot as Julia Roberts. She won the lottery by starring with Tom Cruise. And he implies that it's just pure dumb luck that she's in this huge movie, not because she's so talented and hardworking, but she won the lottery.
They probably didn't audition her at all.
Right,
they were just like, you know, you're almost as cute as these ladies.
You got
we'll,
that girl
we'll
next door thing.
So I guess my question is how... And we talked a little bit about this. How do you write without being so angry that you can't say what you need to say? So how do you...
I think
so
that's my first draft.
Okay. Oh, there you go. That's great.
Like, honestly, it's just like I wrote out all of my feelings and then I sort of looked at that and opened up a new Word document.
It's sort of
made
like...
Made it nicer.
I have to do that and I had to learn this in my 30s about email writing when I was really angry. And And someone said to me, what you're going to do is... Yeah, we got the mooner.
Oh, I missed it.
You
missed
no.
It.
Oh,
well. Yeah, well, it wasn't that exciting. Someone said to me, look, you're a great writer, but you hit send way too easily. And I was like, oh. So I've learned. But so is that kind of what you write a first draft where you get out?
Yeah, and I think you also show it to your friends or your colleagues or whoever to say, does this sound the way, as effective as I want it to sound? Because there's a difference between useful anger and anger that is just going to...
Well, it's hard, too, because as women, right, we're told not to be angry.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So you want something to write something that's authentic, but you also want to write something that's good writing.
Exactly.
I mean, right? So there's a line. Ooh, I'm knocking stuff over. I'm so mad I'm knocking things over. But you want to be able to write a coherent piece. So first drafts are helpful. Yep. So, and right. also showing it to your colleagues.
Yep. Laura, did you show anybody that before you turned it in? Because it's so perfect.
It's so perfect.
Honestly, I didn't. I sort of had the opposite emotion that Katie had. Like, she was really angry and fired up. And I just, like, felt sort of defeated. And, like, I've seen this same story a million times mm-hmm. of the way that people write about women and, you know, take away what is of most value to them, their mm-hmm. talent and their fire and whatever. So I was just like, I don't really know if I have anything different or new to say. So I just tried to be funny. Instead.
It's really funny. You guys got to check out the article. It's on Jen Bosworth's Facebook page. And it's also on the AV Club's website, which is, do we know?
Just avclub.com.
There you go. Very easy. AVClub.com. It's a featured article. Stop jazzing all over journalism. Is that what? Do I have it right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I mean, I have it right to a certain extent. But you will see when you go to the AV site what I am talking about. So I'm here with three fabulous writers from the AV Club, and we're talking about this article that I just mentioned that they have written based on. So it's different writers, take on three articles that came out in major mainstream magazines that were super offensive and I would venture to say disgusting.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Right? Let's use that sure. word. Yeah. And we'll continue talking about that. And we're also here with Shirley Hamilton talent agent Kate, and she will chime in because I'm going to ask you some questions about the Renee Zellweger factor, which will be interesting. But right now, it is time for the news. Good morning, everybody. This Game is Genevieve. Oh, this is Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait, was I supposed to talk about Game of Thrones?
No. Every so often when we have John Tatey from the AV Club on, who's a huge Game of Thrones fan, yeah. I bump with this hoping that Patty will talk about it.
I'll talk about it right now.
I'm told we cannot talk.
Do you guys can talk do you watch about it, Patty?
I'm Jen.
Jen,
but that's okay.
Patty watches it. Do you watch it, Jen?
Here's my problem.
Yeah.
This is what I watch. The answer is no.
Okay.
I don't have a television. I have a computer that I watch. I'm a true crime nut. Mm-hmm. And I've watched the first season, loved it. And then I was watching it with my husband, Miles. And he thought it was too violent. And so we kind of stopped watching it. But here's the thing. I thought everything about it was beautiful.
Patty's complaint is that there's a little bit too much mud.
Mud?
Yeah, there's just a lot of mud. It's a very messy show, and you know that kind of trigger.
Well, what do you love it?
I love it a lot. Yes.
Okay, I think what I saw of it was brilliantly written, beautifully shot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a game. I'm not obsessed by any means, but right. I don't have a problem. But I know people talk about. My husband had I don't know. Are there many a rape scene in this?
Yes.
Unfortunately, yes.
Unfortunately.
So what are we could talk about it for a little bit. What are your thoughts on Game of Thrones?
Well, I love Game of Thrones. Okay. I mean, rape scenes notwithstanding. The problem with those scenes is that they aren't even in the books that they're adapted from.
Oh.
They unnecessarily add these rape scenes. So there's like plenty of violence and plenty of gendered violence in the source material. So that's sort of why those rape scenes get a lot of like warranted criticism.
Oh.
But other than that, I mean, it's a great show. And it's actually, I think...
Well,
wait
a minute. Who's adding those?
The writers.
It's interesting. Do you know what their writer's room looks like? Is it all dudes?
It's. I mean, two men are the showrunners who write most of the episodes.
Okay. It's interesting because now they're showing pictures of people like the Orange is the New Black writer's room. Did you see the picture of that?
Yeah.
It's
everyone's. It's a lot of white women and I think an Asian woman. And I don't know. But anyway, I would just be curious if it's just the two guys or who's writing the stuff.
I think the two guys have most of the writing credits. I do think that those rape scenes are valuable for like... in the way a lot of fantasy is valuable, where it allows us to look at this alternate world and the gender politics in that world and compare in that space how they compare to ours. And so, like, that's a really interesting function that it serves, that we're having these conversations about, you know, rape scenes in the show that we wouldn't be having out in this real world.
Yeah.
Were it not for That's Game true. Of Thrones, providing service.
It's not really fair to say it this way because these rape scenes happened in the show at a time... earlier on in the season. They were in, you know, season 3 or season 4, and now we're in season 6.
Mm-hmm.
The last episode really was empowering, I think, to a lot of the female characters. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of those scenes exist to demonstrate how challenging this road, and this is my own abstract kind of decision that this is how they're valid, but how difficult that road is at the time for these women to all wind up in the power positions, because a lot of the female characters who are leads in the show are now in power positions, which is really great to see.
I think that's a good point. That's a major arc in the show right now that we're seeing in this past season, is that all of these female characters who were at one point subjected somehow are now have come into their own and are now the most powerful characters in the show, which some people were like, well, is that just because of all the criticism? But I think it's written into the DNA of the show, of the books, from the source material, that that's what happens.
Interesting.
So
okay, so you're are you all Game of Thrones watchers?
No. I should be.
So just you. Okay.
Just me.
Okay. Well, everyone's got their thing. I mean, and Craig, you got Craig on your side.
Yeah, I'm
and also
Craig.
Billions of people across the world.
Right.
So you're not, no one's alone there.
Me and Craig and a couple other people.
Craig, is there anything else you'd like to say about Game of Thrones? And I'm serious. I'm not saying we should give
really,
you your
really
time.
Really sweet of you. Yeah. I have so many things I want to say about the last season of Game of Thrones, but I won't. I won't
no
do
spoilers.
All that, because the other conversation you guys are having is is way more important.
Well, I'm open. Okay. So back to your article. Tell me, what is the most interesting comments that you have gotten? Mm-hmm. What is the conversation that has been sparked that you are finding interesting, valuable, and important?
Do you have anything, Laura?
What are you surprised?
I mean, I myself stay away from a lot of the comment section merely because we anticipate a lot of negative energy,
yes,
to put it euphemistically. I don't know if you're familiar with the men's rights activists.
Yes, yes,
group,
I am.
Or community,
yes,
as it were. But I think we knew that going in that it was going to attract a certain element. That,
I mean, yeah, out in the logical world, though, I think we've gotten some really positive feedback from it. I know I went to journalism school, and one of my professors, because I talk a little bit about this idea of newsworthiness, which is something that all journalists learn. There's these tenets of newsworthiness. They're very straightforward. It's not really hard to pick it apart. And these profiles on women, you would think that the newsworthy value is that they're celebrities and that they're acting or singing. And these articles sort of ignore those parts of these women and instead focus on their appearance and their sexiness. And that's not a tenet of newsworthiness.
It's interesting. It then leads to a bigger conversation about what is news and what is newsworthy and what has happened.
And journalists have this responsibility. Like, if you want to go on Reddit or on 4chan and like masturbate to, sorry if I shouldn't say that on air, to pictures of women, that's fine. You can do that in the privacy of your own home. But like these men who are writing these articles have a platform. They're getting paid. And so there's really no excuse for them to be like writing this content that has no journalistic value.
Are they all men that have written these articles?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. And have you come across women that have written articles like this?
There was that Kardashian. Where was the Kim Kardashian article?
That was in GQ.
Yeah.
I was reading that over this afternoon, and it did focus a lot on her appearance and the article. There was a lot of like naked pictures of Kim Kardashian accompanying it. It had a different tenor. It was a different tone. There was like a friendliness and a like a
camaraderie, or
there was a camaraderie in between the writer and
her.
Kim.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like if you look back at that Margot Robbie piece,
it's just like she's a thing on the wall.
Right. You can just feel her getting so uncomfortable
to the point where she leaves when he asks her. The interview ends. The whole article ends when he asks her about the sex scene that she did in Wolf of Wall Street, and she sort of has a couple of comments, and then she sort of just gets up and walks away, and the interview's over.
It's such a dumb question. Like, how do you get ready for a sex scene like that?
It feels like
every one of these puff pieces.
This, you know, she's not a porn star. Like, she's a professional, mm-hmm. and like professionals do sex scenes sometimes. So it's not this lecherous thing that he's sort of trying to make it out to be.
Yes, I mean, everything is sexualized, and everything is under the guise of being sensual. And there's nothing sensual about that. That's all.
Right, it's part of the job. How do you learn a French accent for your new movie?
Exactly.
It's called acting.
Yeah.
That's what
right.
I say. People have asked me, like, well, how did you do that? I'm like, I went to acting school, and then I got a job acting.
That's why you're me instead of the other way around.
And then
I didn't make out with a bunch of French people.
Right. Yeah. Right. And now I'm acting, and then I get a paycheck. So, go ahead.
And in the breakdown, well, Right. Okay, so for Wolf of Wall Street, Scorsese doesn't have to release a breakdown. But they have to tell the actor that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They have to... Yeah, it's very explicit. It's always all
it's
written
technical.
Out.
It's technical. It's a technical thing.
And so, I mean, the whole point is that the actor gets to decide way ahead of the jump.
That's the thing. It's like, people are assuming, especially with actors, I think, that they are just so lucky to get any role, these women, that like they'll do anything and they have no choice or say in it.
Right.
And God forbid you turn down a role where you, I mean, it's just... Yeah, it could get really gross. It is pretty gross.
And I bet you no one asked Leonardo DiCaprio his big profile about his sex scene.
And also,
always ready.
They wouldn't, yeah
he's
right.
He's born ready.
He's a pro. Total. So I guess, okay, so then my other question is this. On the Zellweger article, obviously the whole thing about plastic surgery. Here's the bottom line for me is, and you can all chime in, I feel as though it is none of my business what anyone does to their body. How, if they are harming my body, there's a problem. If Renee Zellweger made me get a facelift under duress, but I feel like, and the Mickey Rourke and the stuff like that, I feel like it is a foil for all the other things we're not really talking about. And it's so easy to focus on the fact that she looks different. And so that begs the question, well, so what? And I guess, what is that so what? Why do people care, especially when women look, what is that? That it was such big news that she looked different. I mean, this was something on my feed for days and days. And it happened, I believe, right around the time, did it not, of a major terrorist event, I think. I mean, there's a lot of them, but it happened and it was higher on my feed than gun control, than... It was crazy. So what is this obsession with blaming people for changing their appearance? What is that besides just sexism?
I mean, I think it's, well, this won't quite answer your question, but I think it's really hypocritical, because those same people are helping to create the culture that values appearances above everything else. So they create that. And so women may or may not feel like they have to get plastic surgery to remain relevant in their industry. And so when they do, and then, oh my God, they don't look like they did when they were 26.
Right.
And then all of a sudden there's all these pieces that, what happened to Renee Zellweger's face?
Like, yeah.
And you know, there's really no way for her to win, right?
No.
Like you can't age gracefully.
Nope.
You can't age at all if you're a woman in Hollywood. I mean, out in the real world to a certain extent, but like certainly in Hollywood. And if she hadn't gotten plastic surgery and if she had aged naturally, that would be the conversation. Like people would be like, can you believe, like, she looks so old.
Right.
Look at her hair. You know, like...
Right. You can't
like
win.
I
think you said it. I mean, I don't think we can win. We're not allowed to win. You know what I mean?
And the last line of that article from Owen Gleiberman, who has been around for a really long time. You know, he was a film critic for Entertainment Weekly, and now he's the chief film critic at Variety. I mean, he's been doing this
forever. He's a legit guy.
Yeah. And his last line was something about how he was worried that he was going to be looking at this movie and looking at somebody who isn't, you know, comfortable with her own appearance, like ruin the movie with, like, first of all, that's a big theme of Bridget Jones, you know, the fictional character, and second of all, that doesn't have anything to do with anything. Do I care about my accountant, how he feels about his appearance? No. You know, you just want him to do the job. And it's something about actors, like, we feel like they owe us this.
Well, I feel like, yeah, public figures, you owe us to look like we think you should look, and you should never change, ever. Like, and it happens to a lesser extent, but with, like, I noticed with President Obama and how much his hair has grayed and how he looks so old. I'm like, first of all, he's the president of the United States. Second of all, he's a human being that is living his life. I mean, it's just amazing that's, again, we are such a picking culture. Pick. And I think that people don't realize that it gets into our, on a cellular level, until I'm totally guilty as charged. I was in Miami and I was at the Starbucks, and there was a woman in front of me who had a very large upper lip, and you could tell she had work done. And my first thought was, oh, why did you get? And then I thought, this is not my business. And I literally had to say to myself, Jen, what's going on? And since I was a therapist, I can do some self-talk. So I was like, what are you feeling? I said, okay, I'm feeling like two things. I'm feeling sad that she felt like she needed to do that, but that I'm judging her, and maybe I'm jealous. I mean, all those things go on at the same time. Right. So I'm not saying it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing because we've been sort of fed all these things, this information that's false. So it's really hard to change it. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to change it. So when we come back, I want to ask that question. How do we change it? How do we change this stuff? Because it's pretty, you know, I was saying last night about what happened in Dallas. We know we have a problem, right? So, and the problem is being called out. The problem is you guys are writing articles that are really calling people to take responsibility for their journalism. And so how do we change people, I guess. Oh boy, that's a big question. But we will be back. This is Jen B. I'm filling in for Patty Vasquez on WGN 720 AM. Good evening. Good evening. We're just talking. This is Jen B. I'm filling in for Patty Vasquez here on WGN 720 AM. And I am joined by Kate, who is an amazing agent at Shirley Hamilton Talent Agency. I'm here with Gwen, Caitlin, and Laura from the AV Club. They have written an amazing article, Stop Jazzing, which is not the word, all over journalism. Or is it all over journalism?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure I have that. Stop Jazzing. You can see the full article with the correct title on my Facebook page, Jen Bosworth, and you can also see it on the AV Club page, which is just www.avclub.com. Now, I probably didn't need to say www. I was aging myself, but I like to say www. Anyway, we're talking, and we have a text coming in, right, Craig?
Yeah, we got a text from the 773 saying, you age gracefully, ... by acting and being graceful. Why do all plastic surgeon patients look alike? That's not the right way to age in Hollywood. So go ahead. Discuss that.
What do you guys think about that comment from our lovely listener?
It's a comment that's providing an answer that's not the problem. Like, that's not for the actual problem. He's talking about aging gracefully, but especially for women, and I think to a certain extent for everyone in Hollywood and in the public eye, you're not really allowed to age naturally. And if you do, you're not going to get, like, you're not going to get roles. You're not going to be able to be successful. And so, like, it's not like, just age gracefully. Like, you, like, that's not the issue. The issue is, like, why do we expect people to not look their age, especially women?
It's interesting. Yes. And I'm going to ask Kate, too, because as an actor in Chicago, it's a little different. Thank you, baby, whatever exists. It is my experience in LA versus here as an actor, totally different. I will never live in Los Angeles again, even if I won't do it. And it's not because I don't want to work. I want to work. But like aging, it's interesting. I feel embraced, and maybe it's because I'm less apologetic about the way I look, more embraced and more work bookable. That sounds so weird. But because I know who I am, Kate, and maybe because I'm aging the way I'm aging. But I think there is a confidence piece that doesn't exist when you're 22 and you're a blonde whatever, and someone's telling you you will be famous and rich and everyone will love you if you just look and stay just like this.
Right.
Here, I don't have that pressure.
Well, and there's a different community, right? So I feel like you're a part of this community, which doesn't exist when, you know, like they're all dumping into LA. And they all look the same, and they were all the prettiest girl from where they came from.
Right.
And they're, you know, and they all have to drive 3 hours to wait in a line for the same audition.
Right. There's more of a community here of women. I mean, people are like, did you have friends? I'm like, my friend were my people that I worked with. I had no community of women around me. Here, not the case. I have a lot of women all my agents are women. Everyone in that office is a woman.
We are Chick City.
You are. It's nice. All, and I love it. I love it. So
you know, I'm curious what you guys think. This might be kind of a parallel or just another scenario where maybe we're proving the texter wrong a little bit. On the red carpet every so often, you see a guy walk down in sweatpants. Like Adam Sandler shows up at the red carpet.
Adam Sandler's never out of sweatpants.
Yeah, he's always wearing sweatpants. And then immediately after, someone like Selena Gomez, who's a 20-something-year-old beautiful person, for whatever reason, some commenter thinks that they're not to the right level of dressed up. And so they critique her, but Adam walks by as if sweatpants is totally fine. Yeah.
Dudes, dudes are allowed to be funny.
Exactly.
Funny and sloppy. Or just relaxed even. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's another way in which kind of we're demonstrating that women in Hollywood, their appearance is part of their career. That's something that's critiqued constantly. And men don't have to deal with that. I don't mean to wrap this to Game of Thrones, but Kit Harington, he had a conversation with someone where they talked about his hair and his appearance because it's very important to his character on Game of Thrones, and he was offended, and he said something about how men deal with sexism too, and this is really ridiculous. Everyone reacted, as you would think, to that. It's interesting when a man deals with one conversation about something like
they
that, and they seem to be offended, and as they've demonstrated tonight, all the coverage of female actresses at some point mentions what they look like.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Kate, what's her last name? She's on Orange is the New Black right now, and she was Captain
Mulgrew?
Jane when, yeah.
Kate Mulgrew.
She has a whole thing in her autobiography about there was like huge conversations about her hairstyle as the new Star Trek captain. Were there any conversations with Patrick Stewart? Or Shatner, you know? Like, there's, no, and it was like, how is she going to be formidable enough with her hair to lead the Enterprise of Star Trek or whatever.
And we were talking about like ways to combat this problem. And I was talking with one of the greatest people. I don't know if you, Mickey Pascal, who runs PR casting, and she's a huge, huge ally. And I said, because I was like, how do we change this? We were talking about women apologizing in the room and shrinking and not being all this stuff. I said, well, how can we change it? We talk a lot about it, but what can we do? And she looked at me and she said, make your own work. Create your own work. And that's why I started writing the screenplay, because I was like, wait a minute. I'm probably never going to get to play, I would love to, this role that I'm writing. If someone else wrote it. Okay. I probably would never get to cast if we don't make it in Chicago, you know, because I have friends in LA. Give me the script. I'll get it into Sandra Bullock's hands. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. I want to play this role and I want it to be me and I want the person to look, you know, exactly like me. I don't want to write a script where someone else plays me. I know. So I think making our own work, I think that's like the only way out of this.
That's what Mindy Kaling did.
Yeah, I think you're right.
She created her own sitcom. And we were talking about age before, and I just want to interject. One of my favorite shows right now is Grace and Frankie.
Yes.
You're talking about women aging in Hollywood, and you have Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, one who has had extensive work done. That's not even a secret. And the other one has not. But they're best friends, and now they get to work in this, and it's a vibrant, wonderful sitcom about, you know, septuagenarians.
Right.
And, you know, you can still work and you can still have a great show and you don't have to be 20 and blonde and a twig.
And I was talking to, I'm a friends with a woman named Samantha Irby, and she has a blog, and I can't say that name on the air either, but she was talking about making TV shows, again, body positive TV shows where people of all sizes are shown in romantic situations and how necessary that is. And so that's, I started writing about that too. But anyway, so other than making our own work, I mean, is there a way that we can start, how do we start combating or just changing the way that we look at media and the way that we look at women in journalism? How do we do it? It's a good question, isn't it?
I think like this sort of relates to your point, but like in publishing where you have, you know, it's not just individual people making, you know, a screenplay or something, but it's a whole group of people coming together. I think diversity really matters a lot in those rooms, you know, getting a lot of different voices and bringing a lot of different people to the table who have a lot of different experiences. Like Gwen and I were talking before this, and it's like, well, yeah, that's great, but how, like, what does that even do? Like, we have an all-female copy desk at the AV Club, and we take a lot of pride in a lot of the, like, sexist, homophobic language that we might catch.
Yes.
Before it, and it's like, it's nothing as there's nothing egregious like that. Right. It's like, it's always very subtle mm-hmm. things that I don't think people notice that they're doing.
So it's like, we have to dig deeper.
And
just having more. Women in the room, like Laura said, yeah. I think if it was an all-male copy desk, they're just not as in tune to being like, oh, this person is over 18, and yet the author's referring to as a girl. It's not something really objectifying, but it's like, you know, men are not called boys the way women right. are called girls. So it's just like things that, as a female copy desk, we are aware of just because of our gender. And so, yeah. like, getting women into those rooms is so important.
Like, an important clarification we did with when Melissa Matheson died.
Yeah.
And we did not put Harrison Ford's ex-wife, Melissa Matheson, died in the headline mm-hmm. like so many yes. other outlets did.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure Variety did. And some didn't, you know, but there was just no way that was going to fly.
Right.
Because she wrote E.T. Like, she had an entire career on
yes.
her own and should not be diminished to somebody's ex-wife.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you guys for being here. It's an important, important conversation. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Gwen. Thank you, Caitlin. Thank you, Laura. The AV Club article that they have written, Stop Jazzing All Over Journalism, is on...
That
laughs
every time.
Is on their website.
I find it funny every single time.
I know.
Sorry.
AVClub.com. And... we will be paying attention. This is an important conversation, and I thank you for being here. Kate, beautiful agent, I'm sure I'll talk to you. I owe you a couple, three voiceover auditions, and we'll talk about that later. And thank you for being here.